Good afternoon, everyone. I want to welcome you to the session. We're going to talk about managing and deploying Office add-ins and Office 365 apps. I would love to see a show of hands. Who here is an administrator of an Office 365 tenant? Okay, a few folks. Who here develops add-ins or is thinking about developing add-ins? Okay, a few. Anyone here that works for an SI or ISV or some sort of partner? Yeah, okay, quite a few, great. So just gonna quickly go over what we're gonna talk about today. So I'm gonna give everyone a summary of Office add-ins just to make sure everyone's on the same page, just a very brief overview of that, because I'm sure some of you already know that. We have our friends here from Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines and Proficient who are gonna show an enterprise line of business add-in. It's a really cool add-in they're gonna show. Just as an example of how enterprises are building these add-ins and using them in their everyday business. I'm going to talk through the options of Office 365 add-ins and apps and how to deploy them. Then I'm going to go into a demo of a new feature that we have. It's currently in preview called Centralized Deployment. I'm going to show that working both in Excel and in Excel Online, which is functionality that we hope to have released fairly soon. Then I'm going to go into timeline and support for that as well. But really, this is going to lead up to the call to action. If you're not already building enterprise add-ins or working with a partner who's building enterprise add-ins for your organization, that's something, there's a lot of functionality, a real great functionality you can get out of these add-ins. So start taking a look at that and working out where there's functionality that makes sense for your business, given the data and the other stuff that you have within your business. And then deploy those add-ins using centralized deployment, which I will show you later on. So why should you build Office solutions? Every business has their own systems, like a CRM system or a sales tracking system or whatever, stock tracking as well. So they have all these data that's in their little islands, and that's great. But there are many occasions where you actually want to bring that information into the environment where a lot of your users in the organization are actually using this day in, day out, which is inside the Office apps, whether that's Word, Excel, Outlook, et cetera. So rather than having this data be off in a separate location, why not just bring it into that experience, have it be in line, and just make it be a very seamless part of their experience within Office. As well as that, it's great that you can build a solution, but you also want it to work on the platforms that Office supports. Many organizations are using devices that are not just desktop PCs. Office is supported on multiple different platforms, including Mac and iOS and online, et cetera. And many organizations are also supporting bring your own device. So you really want that solution to work once or be written once and work everywhere as much as possible. And then thirdly, you've probably heard of the Microsoft Graph, but the Graph is a great way to leverage all the data that's inside the Microsoft Cloud, whether that's your spreadsheets or calendaring information, et cetera. There's a whole bunch of data that's in there that you can actually integrate with that business data that you have and really come up with some compelling solutions. Oop, wrong thing. So what are Office add-ins? So Office add-ins, there's not really a lot of magic to them. They're web apps. And we have this thing called a manifest. It's an XML file, and that's what gets downloaded to the client. So let's say Word, for example. And the manifest, it does have some metadata in there, but the most important thing is the pointer, the URL for that web app. And the web app itself has, through APIs, access to both read and write to the Office app. So you can use it to write to Excel and read from Excel, for example. But it's the combination of those two that really make it the Office add-in, and that's because it's built on web technologies, it is easy enough that you can use it on the other platforms that Office supports as well as PC, desktop, online, Mac, iOS, et cetera. So the manifest has the metadata, some of the metadata, so icons, description, the title of the add-in, that kind of thing. It has the URL that points to the web app itself. Then it has this new functionality called add-in commands, which you'll see more of later on as well. And then the web app, that's really where all the magic happens. It's all the back-end code. It's the thing that interacts with the Office app itself. And it also is where you can connect to your internal services or through the graph to any other services that you want to. So we have lots of Office application support for add-ins. So obviously the canonical ones, Excel, Word, PowerPoint, Outlook. OneNote recently got added on the store, which I'll talk about later on. We have OneNote add-ins up there now. SharePoint as well. And in terms of the OS support, obviously we have Windows. We have online, Mac/iOS. Android is coming soon. I can't say when, but it is coming. Now, saying that, not all the apps are supported on all the platforms. Like I said, OneNote is fairly recent. It only supports web only right now, but the plan is for them to expand across the other platforms as well. So that's coming along. And then the Graph API. So like I said, there's a whole bunch of data that's in the Microsoft Cloud. You can get information about calendaring, the people that are in the organization, the users, and then you can integrate that with your solutions to really come up with something compelling. And it is consistent. It's one API set that you can use to grab this information from the cloud. And the one thing, the last point there is maybe not so relevant for internal add-ins within the organization or apps, but it does support both commercial and consumer. So you write the functionality once, the solution once, and you don't have to change it depending if the user signed in with a Microsoft account versus an org ID, which was the way things unfortunately were previously. But if you were to develop an add-in or an app that was to be released externally, this actually would be a huge advantage. So you can see the kind of information it has there. There is a ton of information that's inside available within the Office Graph. And there are a lot of ISVs out there, a lot of third parties that are building really great functionality using this. So something to bear in mind as well. Office add-ins, add-in commands, I should say. This is a relatively new feature. It's supported on the PC desktop and online today. We are working on Mac as well, and also the other platforms. The thing is, before adding commands, if you built an add-in, you had to kind of root around for it to find the thing to actually use it. Whereas by acquiring an add-in or being deployed an add-in, it can just show up within inside the ribbon. So it's a much more natural experience for users. They just see it as if it's just part of Word or PowerPoint or whatever app they're in. And they don't have to find the thing themselves. So the discoverability should be increased. And it's a pretty simple mechanism. It allows you to interact with the document and call services in your backend without presenting a UI. And I'll show you some examples of that later on. You specify the add-in commands in the manifest, and really what it does is it points to a URL, which is what that action is that's going to happen in the back end. So we support it on a number of clients and a number of the operating systems. So you'll see more of that actually very soon. So with that, there we are. Those are robot bartenders. Just want to mention that. So I'm going to welcome on stage Julie Sivkus-Marine from Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines, and Jason Bell and Ethan Jamrose, who are an SI proficient, and they're going to talk about the Clause Library add-in that they developed. Great.
Thank you, Microsoft, and thank you, Proficient, for welcoming me here to tell you a little bit about my digital story. And as Phil mentioned, my name is Julie Sivkus-Marine, and I've been an attorney in the marketing field for Royal Caribbean for over 10 years now. And just because I'm a lawyer doesn't mean you can leave now. Okay, so just see. But I too have a passion for technology, and so does Royal Caribbean. Royal Caribbean builds the most innovative ships in the industry. And we picked out this picture just as an example. We've got robots on board that will serve you the best drinks on the ocean. But my passion started early as a little girl. I remember when my father gave me my first computer. It was a Texas Instruments computer. It took cartridges to load up the software, and we plugged it into the living room TV to get it to work. So I've been comfortable and I've embraced technology for as long as I can remember. I use it in my daily life personally, and it's only natural for me to want to apply that to my professional life as an attorney. So every opportunity that I get, I'm advocating to my colleagues and to my general counsel, we need to use technology to enhance our legal services. Did my mic go off? And so with enough nudging of my general counsel, I was given that opportunity to address how we can enhance our legal services. So I looked specifically at our knowledge management. Attorneys and legal staff are the keepers of a vast array of knowledge and information. And it takes many, many years to develop this knowledge base. And of course, as you know, over those years, each person will develop their own way of collecting information, of maintaining it, of updating it, of eliminating it. I have my own way, of course, of doing this, and I use a lot of Microsoft products. So as a transactional attorney, I rely heavily on Word to construct my agreement.
Can you
hear me?
No.
Is mine work? Here you go.
FDL.
There you go.
So,
there you go.
Here. It is. So I
uh-oh.
Nope.
There you go.
Maybe if I don't move, I stand like this.
There you go.
So I rely heavily and primarily on Word to draft contracts and other agreements. But I also use OneNote heavily as a way to maintain and store the clauses and other paragraphs and other information that I use routinely. So when I'm drafting an agreement, I'll go into OneNote and search by a keyword, cut and paste from OneNote back into Word. And that's my method. It works for me. Now, when my colleagues need to collaborate with me, let's say that they're interested in a clause that I've drafted, the collaboration usually works like this. Hey, Julie, do you have a clause on indemnification that you can send me? Yeah, sure. So I go through the process of going to OneNote, searching, cutting and pasting, opening up Outlook, and emailing that clause to my colleague, who then opens the email, cuts and pastes it into Word. The work gets done, but there are very, very many manual steps in between. So after this scenario arose time after time again, I realized we don't have an easy way to collaborate. We don't have a tool that will take care of this for us. And we don't have a single repository of information in the legal department. So then I thought, ha, we've got to be able to use technology to address this. So I also thought, well, wait, if I do adopt some kind of technological tool, how am I going to convince lawyers and paralegals and other members of the legal department to abandon the way that they've been collecting and managing information for all of these years? So Royal Caribbean partnered with Proficient, and we knew that we had to build a tool that would be... Hello?
There you go.
All right. So my backup. So we knew that we had to build a tool that was both robust in terms of...
Yeah. There you go. This one's off.
Second and a half.
There you go. Perfect.
All right. So again, Beyonce doesn't have these problems. Karaoke. Okay. So we knew that we needed to build a tool that was robust in terms of both functionality, so to provide those legal services, and also simple enough in terms of the user experience. So we identified that we had to create something in Word, since that was the primary software that we were all accustomed to using. Next, we had to make sure that the features and the functionality reflected user experiences that we were already used to, you know, such as using features that we're using on websites and other software. So it's something that had to feel familiar. But most importantly is that we needed that tool to live visibly in Word. It had to be visible to the user in Word all the time. Because what we have found is that if something is out of sight, it is out of mind. And you know no one's going to use it if they don't remember it, if it's not there. We have to eliminate all barriers to convenience. So Proficient then came up with this fantastic SharePoint-based Word add-in. So now the legal department has its central repository of information, and all the legal members can access this, can contribute to this library. We can make edits to it. We can insert language directly from the library into a Word document. And so now Jason and Ethan from Proficient are going to demonstrate this Word add-in to you.
Thanks, Jim. All right. So just to give you a little background from a technology standpoint, Office 365 was a new investment from Royal Caribbean when we were brought in. So naturally, the platform was already well situated for us to start accomplishing this type of stuff through the Office 365 platform. We used SharePoint as the repository. It allowed us to store information, search, and use the search to surface that information. And then we used the add-in model, which would be an easy deployment model and allow us to easily implement through IT and own that aspect. So what we're gonna do is quickly demonstrate the functionality. First of all, we start off obviously in the admin center, where you can see that the clause library is in the app catalog. We placed it in there. And then if you look at it, with some of the features that we have, not only do you qualify it through descriptors and things like that to make it easy to find if someone else, even within the organization, was looking for it, it also has the provisioning model and the security that allows us to then be able to say who can have access to it. So obviously the legal department wants to keep the stuff within legal, but they do want to make it discoverable so that people go, hey, there's this service that's available. We actually created the service so that while it's being used for the clause library, in the case with the legal department, it is a piece of feature that could be rolled out to other areas that are doing contracting and other aspects. And so there is still a roadmap that there's the same functionality could roll out into other areas that may be interested in using the reusability and the kind of capabilities that are delivered in there. So again, it's an enterprise-wide solution that we've first targeted and put in this area and that the legal department has made the investment in. As far as the product itself, from an architectural standpoint, we used what we consider to be the best features of Office 365 with the SharePoint model, because it allowed them to actually put it into SharePoint, and if they want to do some administrative things or place metadata on it and do other types of qualifications around the clauses, it gave us an easy model for being able to surface and find that information. As you can see, one of the things we talked about is the attorneys are very keen on working within Word. They don't like to go out and do other things. This is their life. They're either in Outlook or they're in Word, and they're going back and forth between those. They don't want to go to a website. They don't want to go to OneNote. They don't want to leave where they're doing their transaction. And so what we did is we tried to bring this in and bring this area in. So you can see from the add-in, when we go to add it in, it shows up right there. It's an add-in. You basically add it in. And what we did is we are leveraging the add-in model and docking it into the pane. So you can see now it's in the ribbon. So Phil mentioned the ribbon capability, so you can see it's just placed right up there. It says the clause library. When they launch it, it's there, quite visible, and now they can put it into the document, and it's placed right there into the body of the work area that they're working in. Within now this clause library add-in, what we did is we did leverage all the CSS and the styling that's part of that. So we didn't do any really custom work around making it look and feel anything like what it would look like already in their normal Office 365 or in their Office experience. We also wanted to surface the content in such a way that they could, if they already knew they were in a particular metadata field or searching for things, that we could make it easy for them. So in the search capabilities, we created the metadata tags. We built out the different areas that they may be storing stuff and pulling information, allows them to quickly select an area. And since we are actually working in Royal Caribbean's production environment, we created a special category for you guys to show you this. So we actually have the Ignite category, so you don't actually see some of the legal clauses they're working in. But this is their production environment. We're hitting their Office 365 tenant, and we're looking at content that's being stored in their production environment. And then you can see now, we looked up here, we found our Ignite content, and if we want to place this clause in here, say this was a non-disclosure contract they were working on, and there was a specific clause they wanted to be able to put in there, they could search for that, see where it had been used previously. and then basically select it and say, hey, I want to insert this in there, and it places it right into the Word document. Pretty quick and easy if you already have content. Well, you ask, well, what about if we have a bunch of content we now need to place in there? Again, we wanted to make it easy for them. We wanted to be really easy. They don't have to do anything. So they basically can select content and add it, and now it's going to say, now qualify this information. What categorization is this for? And some other types of features that we have in there, as well as we had some capabilities to do some additional formatting right in line there. So if you want to do some simple formatting, or it could just select the formatting that we'd already done within Word itself. It's again taking that HTML and then all the formatting that we had, placing it right into the repository. So if they had bold, if they had tables or any of those types of formatting things, again, making it as easy for the attorneys to collaborate and put stuff in and out without ever leaving their area of work. And it works fairly efficient. You can see there's not a lot of learning experience that needs to go into this because, again, we're leveraging the all the framework and the platform that's been placed there for the add-in model. And then I think the other thing is that we did have some the concerns around they want to favorite stuff because, again, this can get kind of big, get kind of large. So we did create some favoriting capabilities where you would actually be able to favor that and it would come up earlier in your search. And again, since it's built on SharePoint search, it's building on the intelligence that goes with SharePoint search. So the more that they start searching and finding stuff, the more context sensitive it's going to be and start bringing back that type of information.
Cool.
All right.
Very good. And thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Oops. Yeah, sorry. Thank you. Sure. Clicker stopped working. Yes, thanks for that demo. I thought actually it's a really good example of an add-in that the attorneys are used to using Word to craft these contracts, and it's just very easy for them to pull stuff out of the library into the document and also write stuff to the back end as well. So I actually think this is a really good example of a line of business add-in that organizations would use. So Office 365 apps, I've talked about add-ins. I want to talk briefly about apps. So there's not a lot of magic to web apps. They are Azure registered web apps. They use Auth or OpenID Connect for authentication, or SAML, either we support both. So I say their min bar is support single sign-on. Depends what authentication endpoint you're using for Azure. For the V1, it does support single sign-on. It's great, all works with org ID. For the V2 one, it prompts you for a password, or to choose which account you want to use. So it's not quite single sign-on. But either way, it allows you to integrate with the Office 365 launcher. So always up in the top left, when you're in Office 365, there's the, I don't know what that is, hamburger or waffle, I think we call it. And you click on that, and you can pin these apps very easily to that launcher. So it's an extension to Office 365 in the web experience. So that's all great, but that's kind of the min bar. But really, to add any value to the Office 365 experience, you really should be calling the graph, because there's a whole ton of information that's stored within that within your tenant that you can leverage using these. And you can support there's really two types of apps. There's single tenant or multi-tenant. So a single tenant would really be it's a line of business app that you only want to make available within that tenant. So Coca-Cola, for example, I mentioned them seeing as we're here. They may have an add-in that it's only for them, it's not intended for anyone else, so they would create a single tenant app. Whereas an ISV who wants to have multiple tenants and multiple customers use this app would make it multi-tenant, which means it can be used by more than one. I'll talk more about Office 365 apps later. But which one to build? So you saw in that Royal Caribbean demo that the Office add-in is really integrating and extending the Office app, in that case, Word. So it's an inline experience. I don't have to go anywhere else to integrate with my Word document. It's all done within Word itself. So that's why you would really create an Office add-in. An Office 365 app or an Azure registered web app, it's really if you want to integrate and extend Office 365. So it's really inline versus extending Office 365. So where would you get add-ins or apps from? So fairly common if you're building internally or you have a very specific business need is a bespoke add-in or app. So you may go to a partner or you may have an internal development team that build this. But for example, Contoso is a company. They have a company review system that's it's only a thing that they're going to build that they need. No one else needs to use that functionality. So it's something bespoke just for them. Or you could have something that was ISV built that maybe was customized. So it could be that the partner has a solution, but it's not quite right for your company. So you go to them and you request some additional changes. So it's a slight customization specifically for your organization. So in this case, we have the Fabricam legal tracker, which is a generic system that they have, but they customize functionality on it for Contoso, who's the enterprise. And then finally, you could have something that's kind of a standard product. It's not intended to be, you're not going to do any custom code specifically for a customer. It's just going to be apply for all users of the add-in or the app. That's not to say the back-end service may not support customization that the admin for that organization could apply, but that no one's going to write any custom code to support that. So, for example here, Fabricam have a CRM system. They may release it on the Office store, for example, and people can use it and download it. Or download it and use it. But how do you deploy these within your organization? So, depends what you mean by deployment. There's lots of stages you can go through in the life cycle. And the ones that I've highlighted there are kind of the recommended approaches or the future direction. So for example, testing an add-in during development, sideloading is the way to approach that. I'll talk about that in more detail. If you want to distribute your add-in or app publicly, have lots of people download it and use it. That's not to say it can't be backed by a service that people have to pay for, but it's a very easy way to distribute to a broad audience externally, would be through the Office store. If you want to deploy an app in your organization, the Azure Management Portable is the place today. And if you want to deploy an add-in within your organization, there are lots of options. if you're on Outlook today, they have a mechanism to do that with inside the Exchange Control Panel, which I'll talk about later. There's the SharePoint add-in catalog, and there is centralized deployment, which I will talk about lots more in a minute. So sideloading. The way to think about sideloading is it's telling the Office client app to look at a specific manifest or a folder of manifests. Either way, it's really the same thing. Each platform does it slightly different because each platform is slightly different. So that's picture there is for the PC desktop. It's a pretty simple mechanism. You create a folder, you share it, so you end up with the UNC path. And then inside the trusted catalogs, this is in the options, it's buried a little bit, you basically point to that folder. So you can drag and drop manifests into that folder. They will show up under the My Organization tab. And it's a pretty simple mechanism. Online, the easiest way to do it is inside the My Add-ins dialog is to click on Upload Add-in. And it will pop it up, and you can upload the manifest, and it will last for that session. Easy way to test that add-in with inside the online clients. Mac has this folder called WEF. Well, if it's not there, you can create it. But under Excel or Word or whatever, there will be a WEF folder, and you can add a manifest in there, and again, it will show up inside the client. And iOS, we do it through iTunes. There's a process to do that. People, depending on which client you're using, people do like this option. And the question always comes up, well, can we use it for deployment? It's not really intended for deployment. I wouldn't say it's a supported path. There's a difference between whether it's supported and whether it works. It may work in a small number of people. But if you start getting to tens, 20s, it's really going to start creaking. So it's really intended for testing. That's what we recommend people to do it for. And it does require client configuration. I've gone through all these steps here that you need to do in order to point the client to the manifest. On the PC desktop, you could do a group policy to set this, but it is different across all the platforms, depending on that specific platform. Publishing to the Office Store. So the Office Store's a good place to publish add-ins if it's a general add-in that can be used by anyone. Like I said, the service itself that's back-ending it, maybe a paid service, could have some customization that's specific that the admin in that organization would set up, but the code wouldn't be specific. So this is great for public add-ins. You want to go to a broad audience, but anything that's going to be internal or customized, it's really not the best place for. And the process for this is we have a site called Seller Dashboard. This is an ingestion tool. So you upload the manifest, you enter all the metadata, and when you want it to be published, whether you want it to be free or paid, and then you submit it to Microsoft. We have a validation team that validate it against the policies for the Office Store. And then when it's approved, we make it available on the store. You can also choose which regions you want it to show in. Typically, these add-ins go worldwide, but you can also restrict that as well. So with regards to Office 365 apps, the location to do this is inside the Azure Management Portal. So as an admin, you would go in there, if you were creating an internal app, you would register that app, you would specify the URL, you would decide which permissions it needed. So through the graph, you know, if you need a specific access to Exchange or SharePoint or whatever, you would specify it within this UI. Or you can register third-party apps. But ultimately, what you can get to is a point where you can assign users and groups to that app. And this is actually important because it's related to the centralized deployment feature I'm going to talk about later on. Outlook. Outlook has a slightly different mechanism. So as an admin, I can go to the Exchange control panel. I can either upload a manifest to the XML file, or I can choose add-in from the store, either one. And what it ends up doing is storing the manifest inside the org mailbox in Exchange. And what that means is the add-in actually becomes available for everyone in the organization by default. That's what you can do through the UI. You can also, through PowerShell, and I have a little bit of script there at the bottom, you can choose to assign to individual users. It doesn't show up in the UI. It tells you that you've assigned it to users, but there's no way to tell which users it's been assigned to. So you have to run more PowerShell to work that out. But you can see here what it's doing is it's basically blowing apart the finance team and getting the list of all the users that are in that group. And it's assigning those users to that add-in. So it is a mechanism to do this. It's not dynamic, though. So if more people get added to that group, you'd have to run this script again. Yes, so that's if you're an admin. If you're a user and you acquire an add-in for yourself, the manifest gets stored in a slightly different location. It's called the user mailbox, which the name implies it's just for your user. It's not for the organization. The add-in catalog. So the add-in catalog is a SharePoint site collection. You can go in there, you can create it. There's basically two catalogs, one for SharePoint and one for the other Office apps. Yeah, it's a list, basically. So what you do is you upload the manifest to that list, you then point the clients to that trusted catalog. And it is designed for distribution. And I should be clear exactly what that means. It doesn't automatically install the add-in. It basically makes it available. So the way to think about it, it's kind of a curated catalog. So inside, let's say, Excel, you can see the list of add-ins that have been uploaded through the add-in catalog, but it's not going to install it for you. It does require setup. You have to actually configure the add-in catalog before you can upload the add-ins within SharePoint. And you also need to point the clients to the SharePoint site. So you need to, same as the trusted catalogs, a bit like the side loading that I showed you earlier, you point it to that URL. One thing that's a bit of a kicker here is we don't support adding commands, the ribbon extensions for add-ins that have been acquired through the add-in catalog. So that's obviously has some implications. But it supports most of the clients. Obviously, Outlook does its own thing, so it doesn't need this process. And so centralized deployment. This is a feature we have in preview. We announced it at build. It's still in preview. We've decided that we want to get more functionality in before we release it to broad audience. So the functionality we have here right now is through either the UI or PowerShell, you can upload an add-in. And I'll do a demo of this later on in a minute. But you assign users and groups to the add-in. We, talking to a lot of customers and ISVs, they felt that assigning the add-in to everyone isn't necessarily what organizations want to do. They maybe sell it, assign it to the marketing department or the legal department, but not the whole tenant, because not all add-ins are relevant for everyone within the tenant. So anyway, that's where the group support comes in. It is designed for corporate deployments from the ground up. It will automatically deploy add-ins to the user's desktop and client apps. I'll show you that later on. It does support add-in commands, and there isn't any client configuration. If you're on the right build of Word, Excel, or PowerPoint for now, things will just start appearing, which is great. So there's no user configuration that needs to be done. You don't need to run any group policy or anything. It just will show up. And there is no server setup. You don't have to create a catalog. You just upload the manifest, and there it is. So now what I will do is show you a demo. That's number 7. Okay, so this is Excel Online. You can see here I have two add-ins under this tab, which is Office 365. So all I'm showing you is I currently have two assigned to me. So these are add-ins that I've previously uploaded through the centralized deployment feature and have assigned to this user. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into the Office 365 Admin Center. So you can see those two add-ins again, the API, what is it, tutorial, and the file uploader. So that user ended up with both of those add-ins. You can see here that we have the host apps and that these are on. So some people have not been able to find this UI. I'll just quickly show you how you get to it. So this is the new admin experience inside Office 365 Admin Center. Some people may go to the old admin experience, which is this one. So if you see this, you're not going to see the functionality there. But you can click on this link here. It will bring you to the new admin center, and you should be able to see this. Okay, so under settings, services and add-ins. So this page shows us add-ins plus also some other services, Office 365 services. But I'm just going to filter it down to the add-ins. You can search as well. So that's the three I showed you earlier. I'm going to upload an add-in. So right now, what we have in preview, and this is in production, we have the ability to upload a manifest or specify a URL. Either way, it grabs the manifest and sends it into our back end. We are also working on store add-in support, which I'll talk more about later on. So I'm going to upload my XML file. So this example is it's a pretty decent example. What it's going to do is pull, this add-in is going to pull data from back-end web service. And the data is going to get sent as OData, and it will then get placed in the client inside Excel, and we'll do some comparison information later on. So let me hit next. So what this is doing is some light validation. It's making sure that the manifest schema is correct, that the versioning is all there, that you don't already have a duplicate of this add-in in the back end. So it's giving you some information there. It's showing you the status, which is on, the version, which host apps it supports. So in this case, it's Excel. The provider, which is Contoso, that just means who wrote it. This is an embarrassment of a description. Tells me who it's assigned to. So currently, it's unassigned. So I'm going to hit Edit. Now, what I can do, and this is what the guys were showing earlier, you could assign it to everyone in the tenant, or you could assign it to specific users or groups. So in this case, I'm going to assign it to a user. strictly speaking, I wouldn't recommend this. Really, you should be assigning groups because there's a lot more flexibility in adding and removing users in groups rather than having to go back to the admin and say, can you add this extra user in? So in this case, I'm just going to add Sky just to show you that it works. Then we have a group here called the sales department. So this the groups that we support are whatever's in Azure Active Directory. As long as the users and groups are in AED, they will show up and they will work. So any distribution lists, security groups, SharePoint groups, I think, and Office 365 groups, you can use those. You can assign people or those groups to this add-in. There are some caveats, which I want to go over. Some groups, distribution lists is a great example, can support nesting. So you could have your overall group that you assign to the add-in, and it could have nested groups within that other distribution lists. Unfortunately, we're using Azure Active Directory to do all these assignments. It doesn't support the nested groups underneath there. So you need just the primary group. Any users that are in that initial group is what we will assign. We can't do anything that's underneath that. So that's something to bear in mind when you think about creating those groups. The user needs to be on the latest builds of Office 2016. So if you're on Pro Plus, that's great. You will have those builds. And the functionality will be there in any build that's from May onwards. That's a requirement. And then we store the manifest in Exchange. So I want to be clear about why we do that. So we store the metadata about the add-in inside Azure. And we use just straight out of the box Azure functionality. We haven't done anything custom for that. So we're creating the app and the service principal, and we're assigning users to that, users and groups. And then we store the manifest with inside Exchange inside the org mailbox. And the reason for that is we wanted a system that was compliant. And what that really means is that the manifest and the data isn't going outside of your tenant. Everything's contained within your tenant. So there's not some random server at Microsoft that the whole thing's going off to that's outside of your tenant. It's all contained within the tenant that you have. That does have some limitations at the moment, which we are working hard with the Exchange team to fix. But right now, the users, if they're assigned, they need to be on Exchange multi-tenant or dedicated vNext. So obviously, if you're on dedicated, that has an implication. Dedicated users are getting moved to dedicated vNext, so that should not be an issue, hopefully, soon enough. For Exchange on-premise users, so some organizations have people that are on Exchange multi-tenant and some on-prem. Unfortunately, those on-prem users right now won't be supported, but we hope to get that fixed fairly soon. So I'm going to hit save. So you see that those users are assigned. So hit save again. So this is, as I said, it's creating the app inside Azure Active Directory. It's creating the service principal. It's adding the app role assignments. So it's basically creating everything we need, all the metadata, all the assignment data for that add-in. And it's also uploading the add-in to the org mailbox inside Exchange. So you can see it's been uploaded. Okay. Now I'm going to go. I'm going to go to Excel, desktop. So I'm signed in as Shirley. So Shirley is a member of the sales department. She doesn't. In this case, she didn't even know she was assigned this add-in, but that's happened as part of this process, just because she happens to be in the group. So you can see here, this is the uploader. Sorry, let me zoom in. This is the uploader add-in that she was assigned to previously. That's showing up as an add-in command inside the ribbon. And if I go to data, I can see this new add-in. This is the OData integration example that I just uploaded. So you can see here I have three buttons inside this UI. One that's going to pull data. So it's going to call the web app that the add-in is back-ended by, is going to call a service. It's going to request some data, which happens to be in an OData format. It's going to pull it back, and then it's going to display it inside Excel. So let me just kill that. Did I hit the button? OK, it's pulling that data now. I'm going to go to my online client. So this is Excel Online. You can see here again, I have the uploader adding command there. I'm going to refresh. So remember earlier, I just had the two add-ins assigned to me. It's going to download the, it's going to call our back end and say, does the user have any new add-ins? And it is, it's going to show it here under the data tab. So I have here exact same functionality. It's the same add-in. It's not doing anything different. So I'm going to go back to Excel. So you can kind of see this. Let me zoom in a bit. So it's pulled back a list of data. This is shopping list or stock information, whatever. So I can start making changes to this inside the client. So it's written data into the client. You know, it's a nice experience. There's no UI that's popped up as we currently have with a lot of add-ins. It's just done the work. It's called the back end, and it's written straight into the Excel document. But I can start making changes to this. So I'll just say that's gluten-free. And I'll start making some price changes there. That's great. Whoops. There you go. I will go to my web client. I will do the same thing. I'm going to call this grapefruit flavor. Change some of these numbers. Right. So that's great. Now I'm going to hit compare data on both. So this is actually going to launch what we call a task pane. Sorry, that's a bug on this page. I need to do that again. So this is the same exact same add-in running in both, deployed through the same mechanism. It's showing here, it's highlighting the row where and the cell where something has changed. Same functionality in both. Both the web client and inside Excel desktop. So one add-in, one back-end, doing the same thing, two different clients deployed through the same mechanism. I didn't have to do anything on either client, so they just started showing up for me as a user. So let me just turn off Excel there. I'll go back to my admin UI. So I talked earlier about you can direct assign users, but you could use groups instead. So it's great if your organization allows you to create distribution lists yourself and add users and remove users from them. That would be a great mechanism to do this. So just by being added to the group or the distribution list or whatever, you would suddenly get this add-in. If you, let's say, moved from the sales department to the marketing department, you would end up in different groups. And if they had different add-ins, then your add-ins would disappear and appear. So that's one way of doing that, which is great. The other thing is, well, let's say, for example, my back-end server's having a few issues. Don't quite know. I can't pull my OData data. I don't want to delete the add-in, but I do want people to stop calling me. So I'm going to turn it off temporarily, which may cause more calls. Who knows? But what it's going to do is it's not going to show up in the UI anymore. So that should be less of an issue. So I'm going to go back into the online client. I'm going to hit refresh again. So I go back to data. It's not there because it's been turned off. The good thing about doing it this way is the users still have the assignments. So if I want to turn it off temporarily, I'm not blowing away all the data that I have because if it comes back an hour later, I can turn it back on. So I'll just show that now. So I go back to the client. Oops. And then I go back to the data tab. You can see that's there. So that's a good way to do that as a temporary thing. There is also the nuclear option. You can delete the add-in. That's going to delete the app inside Azure, the service principal, the app role assignments, everything. It's going to remove the manifest from Exchange and just get rid of everything there for you. So that's that. So anyway, simple way to deploy those add-ins across those platforms. I'll talk more about what other platforms support and what the roadmap is for that later on. Go back to here. here. So, administrator dashboard. So, it's great to be able to assign and deploy add-ins to users. But one of the gaps that we felt was there, and talking to enterprises that they felt were there as was lacking as well, is what's great that I know people have been assigned this add-in, but I don't know if they're using it. How do I actually tell, you know, the business owner that this thing's not being used? We should probably kill the feature because it's costing us money as an organization. So, so there was that aspect of it. The other thing was, how do we know if users can actually get this add-in? Maybe they're not on the right version of Exchange, or they haven't got the latest Office clients. Is there any way we can actually communicate that to the administrator? So what we wanted to do was track the assignments of the users and whether they're actually using the add-in. So you can see in this UI, it's kind of hard to see, to be honest, but it's going to show you you know, how many users have used it this week, this month, et cetera, lifetime. So it'll give you a percentage of, based on the number of users it's been assigned to, how many have actually been using it. The other functionality we want to add in there is not just the add-ins that have been corporately deployed using the centralized deployment feature, but also add-ins that people may have acquired from the store. So you may find that there's, all of a sudden, there's a lot of people using a particular add-in that they've acquired from the store, just as individually kind of a viral thing. And based on that, you may actually make more sense to deploy it centrally, so you get more ownership over it. And it may be that more people actually should be using it than currently are. And the other thing there, you can kind of see it there on the right-hand side, is I showed you where you can assign users and groups, but we want to actually tell you, can this user even use this feature? Are they on the right version of the client, et cetera? So that's something we're working on now. I think it's going to be actually a really great admin feature. So in terms of the roadmap, so supported today. So we are inside Office 365 Admin Center under that services and add-in section. This is the thing that still pains me. We are in a number of English regions only. We have unfortunately had some localization work which we needed to get checked in. We hope to have that done very soon, and I mean within the next couple of weeks. 2 to 3 weeks, hopefully. So that would mean the preview would be worldwide. We wouldn't have any of the localization issues that we currently have. So hope to get that fixed soon. In terms of the client support, in preview now, we have Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. That's in 2016, the May builds onwards. And that's on the PC desktop. Users and groups we support, like I said, the users must be registered in Azure Active Directory. So as long as they're registered in there and as long as they're on all the right bits, they will get access to those add-ins. The user must be signed in using their organizational ID in the client. Otherwise, we don't know who they are. We can't authenticate them. We can't check to see what add-ins they have assigned. So that needs to be done. And I also mentioned the top level of groups. That's if you've got nesting, we can't pick up the users in the subgroups. We are working with the Azure team to see what we can do around that as well. But that's just something to bear in mind. You saw in what I just showed you that the add-in can be downloaded automatically on refresh or on boot. There's nothing the user needs to do to support that. One thing I will say is that is in production right now, but it is slowly rolling out. We're trying to get it through our various validation steps and hope to get it to 100% soon enough. So if you are on the latest builds of Word, Excel, or PowerPoint, that functionality should be there fairly soon. And like I said, because of where we store the manifest and the functionality we have available is the support's there only for Exchange multi-tenant and for dedicated vNext. Like I said, we are working with Exchange to try and get that fixed so that we can support both dedicated and on-prem Exchange users as well. So that's great. That's in preview, but you know, some people won't use it until it's launched. So which we want to get to very soon. So this is the list of things that we want to support at or close to general availability, which we hope to happen early in 2017, as early as possible. So I showed you the online client for Excel. We hope to have that checked in and in production in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So as soon as these features are in a state where we feel they're ready for preview, we'll put them in preview. So it's not like you'll need to wait until 2017 to use the Excel client. Word and PowerPoint will follow soon afterwards, hopefully a couple of weeks after that as well. So that functionality should be there fairly soon. I showed you the ability to upload a manifest, but what a lot of people want and what we want to give them is the ability to select a store add-in within that same admin UI and assign them out to users or groups. The administrator dashboard I talked about, we want to get that functionality in, think that's going to be really cool. We do have PowerShell commandlets. We haven't released them yet, but we hope to get those out soon as well. We need to make a few tweaks to those. And Mac. So our team is working on Mac in some kind of two aspects of it. One is supporting the centralized deployment feature, the auto downloading of add-ins that you've been assigned, plus also the add-in commands. So we kind of really need the two features together because that's really where you're going to get a lot more usage of add-ins on Mac. So we are working on that as well. And then Outlook, we're using Exchange as the back end. We should support Outlook as well. So we are working with that team to get that moved over. If you're a purely Outlook Exchange on-prem, though, that will still go through the existing ECP UI. We're not going to move that over for pure on-prem accounts. So in terms of the roadmap, these colors are a bit hard to see, but so we are in preview with Word, Excel, PowerPoint on Windows. Outlook, like I said, we hope to have soon. And one note, we haven't actually started talking to those guys in depth about the Windows client. We will probably get the online client up for them sooner, and all the other online clients as well. And then, like I said, we're working on Mac. We need to talk more to the OneNote team as well about support on that. So that's the matrix. iOS is not on this list at the moment. It's a little further out. We have some dependencies we need to work through first before we can start on that work. So I didn't want to put it on the list and kind of insinuate it's going to be coming in the next few months, which it isn't, but we will be working on it. So with that, I mentioned this at the beginning. Start building enterprise add-ins if you're not already, or work with partners like Proficient here to help build those. I think there is a lot of value that can be added into that experience for your end users inside the apps that they use day in, day out. The other thing is the centralized deployment feature. If you're on one of those locales that supports it, but hopefully in the next couple of weeks everyone can use it, is to actually try it out. I'd love the feedback. If you're a partner and you work with an organization who is interested in working on a program with us to help you with this deployment, we would love to help. So feel free to mail me. My email address is Phillips, as in the arena next door, Phillips, Phillips at Microsoft.com. I'd love to get involved. So if you're a partner that works with an enterprise or you're an enterprise customer, either way, I'd love to help you with doing that. I actually have no idea what this slide is, so I'm going to skip that. And please evaluate the session, standard slides. Open to questions, though. We've got about 15 minutes, so if anyone has any questions, feel free. Probably best to use the mic so everyone can hear. No? Okay. sure? Okay, well, that's all right. Well, thank you very much for attending. I'll be up here at the front for a while, so if you've got any questions, feel free to ask. Thank you.